Okay, welcome to the broadcast. A little bit of a technical difficulty. I should have James Perloff with me momentarily. Hopefully he continues to call in.
I'm here.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listeners, this is American Exposé without the music. And we're joined tonight with James Perloff. And James, you know, you're the author of The Shadows of Power, which was written when? When did you write The Shadows of Power?
I wrote it mostly in 87, published in 88, so it's been out there for a while now.
1988. And so you've written other books, Tornado in a Junkyard. What was that book about?
That was about Darwin's theory of evolution and the growing scientific case against it.
And then you have the case against Darwin.
Right, which is just a very short version of Tornado in a Junkyard for people who don't have time for a full-length book, and a lot of people these days don't have that kind of time.
Well, we're in a mess today, and we've always been in a mess, as you realize.
Yeah, ever since, except in the Garden of Eden, since then.
Well, I'm saying right here, right now. I don't know where the Garden of Eden is right here. Do you?
No, I don't think we'd find it right at the moment.
We deal with these deceptions, and I've certainly covered some pretty depressing information. And hi to Jimmy out there from Texas. I appreciate your support. And certainly the picture is very bleak. As the you're fully aware of what's going on.
I don't know any of us are fully aware, but I think some of us are maybe a little bit better informed than the public, who strictly relies on the major mass media for their news and views.
The Council on Foreign Relations has been in place since 1921. They created that, the elitists, I guess you can call them, emanating from the Federal Reserve to begin with, I suppose, as far as the 20th century is concerned and as far as documenting things that are going on. The Federal Reserve and then the Council on Foreign Relations after the World War One brought about the control and structure in place to manipulate us into the global economy, the global New World Order that we're in right now, the presence of the United Nations everywhere where people don't realize it's even happening. What are your thoughts on all this, having written that book way back in 1988, was it?
Yes, well, the Shadow of Power is about the Council on Foreign Relations. Its subtitle is The Council on Foreign Relations and the American Decline. Because the Council has been sort of a shadow government for the United States. It supplies most of our cabinet members, unknowns to the public, and it has long been an advocate of one world government and globalism, and you can certainly see the effects of that in our policies. But since writing the book, you certainly see us rapidly heading in that direction of one world. And the European Union is a great example of countries losing their sovereignty. The things we talked about back in the 80s are happening now before our eyes. I mean, Europe's got the euro, the consolidated their currency. They're talking about having a European Pentagon, consolidating their economies and laws. And, of course, the Dutch and the French recently rejected the EU Constitution. But European Union is sort of a macrocosm of global government. And the globalists, what they really want is for NAFTA to emulate the European Union and to expand NAFTA into bigger trade alliances until finally all of the regional frameworks are absorbed into one big world convention.
And that is in the process of being directed right now.
That's correct. NAFTA was sold to people as simply a trade agreement, but they sold the Europeans on the common market. They said that would be just a trade agreement, but they quickly converted it into a political arrangement. As soon as they had the trade alliance in effect, the common market, then trade disputes came up, and they said, well, the only way to resolve these disputes over trade is to have common laws. So they came up with the European Parliament and ultimately the European Union, and that's also what they envision NAFTA becoming. The political European style consolidation.
It's all under the guise of regionalism and the United Nations system.
Correct. My book, I quote Council on Foreign Relations publication, Foreign Affairs. That's their journal that they publish. And you can find a lot of statements on in there regarding their plan of turning regional governments, regional organizations, and the international global organizations. For example, Zbigniew Brzezinski, one of the major players in the council, said this in 1995. He said, quote, "We cannot leap into world government in one quick step. The precondition for genuine globalization is progressive regionalization."
Now, the European or the French people, and I don't know why they put the European Union under a ballot to be voted on anyway.
They probably regret that mistake.
Well, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because most people in the world at this late date of 2005 are pretty well aware of what's going on, aren't they?
You mean in terms of the plan?
In terms of the plan, the manipulation of populations, the wars, the creation of wars, the...
Well, Chris, I think you're right. I think thanks to the Internet, people are learning a lot of information that they wouldn't have had access to 20 or 30 years ago, and I think that there's a lot of people out there are better informed than the establishment probably gives them credit for.
Yeah, now you evidently have a CD out. Is that correct?
That's true. I have a music CD out, but it's unrelated to this topic, but it's a politically incorrect music CD sold through WorldNetDaily.com. It's called Freedom Shall Return. It's got rock and roll for conservatives on there. It's 12 songs about issues like the New World Order, homeschooling your kids. It's got a tribute to Vietnam vets on there.
Who did the lyrics and the music?
Well, I did the lyrics and the music, but I just didn't perform it. I'm not a singer. So we had seven different vocalists.
I see. So you did the lyrics, and you just had someone do the lyrics.
No, I wrote the lyrics and the melodies, and then I got together with a Christian music producer, and we produced it at his studio. We had a lot of Christian musicians come in, and we had about 9 or 10 really good artists perform on it.
Well, that's pretty fabulous. So for them to get this CD, they have to go to WorldNetDaily?
WorldNetDaily.com sells it on their online bookstore. You can also get it on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
Called The Freedom Shall Return.
And what other projects are you in the middle of at this point? I mean, are you concerned about directions? Are you about to write something else? Or?
Well, actually, right now, you know, I do a lot of lectures on creation versus evolution. This is a critical issue for me. You know, I was an atheist, Chris, for many years. It's a direct result of evolutionary teachings in the public schools, and I realize we're getting off the foreign relations here. But
that's
an atheist for a long time, and as a result of evolutionary teachings, and later on, after coming to faith, I started to discover the evidence that exists for intelligent design and for creation and the many loopholes in Darwin's theory. I mean, just for example, the complexity of a cell, the idea that it would come about by chance is just nonsense. So there's so much evidence out there that I've written two books on that subject, which we mentioned at the top of the show, but I also do a lot of public lectures on this topic, and what I'm actually in the middle of right now is developing a PowerPoint presentation. I've been using overhead slides for a while, and you know, a lot of places they say what, you know, I haven't caught up the technology yet, so I'm actually working on developing a PowerPoint presentation on that subject.
Well, at this stage, the destruction of God is a paramount direction of the elitist system.
Right. Well, I mean, God's been kicked out of our schools. He can't, school prayer being forbidden and punished. Our religion's under attack. Our values under attack through the court system.
Yeah, and we can get off on this direction. I'm sure the listeners would like to hear something different than what I'd give them on a constant basis. You can give us your thoughts about Darwinism and creationism.
Well, sure. Darwinism, like I say, for me, was when I was in the sixth grade. I was not raised as a Christian, but was not raised as an atheist either. And I had an open mind about it until I was taught the theory of evolution in the sixth grade. And I remember one of my little classmates who was raised religiously, raised her hand and said to the teacher, well, that's not what the Bible says. And he just shot her right down and said, oh, listen, science has proven the Bible is wrong, you know. And a lot of my classmates piped up and said, oh, yeah, but science has proven the Bible is wrong. And so that was kind of the moment for me when I started to disbelieve in the idea of God and was convinced that somehow that Darwin and science had disproven him. And I went down the whole road of becoming an atheist, which is, well, for me, was a pretty miserable lifestyle. But then after coming to faith after many years, I still had held over evolutionary ideas. But then I was just stunned to discover the wealth of evidence that exists against Darwin's theory. Now, there's variation in nature, but as far as Darwin's theory, which says that, you know, life started from chemicals and as a single cell, and then the single cell, the germ, you know, evolved into a marine invertebrate, which evolved into a fish, which evolved into a land creature. The evidence against that is so strong that I just felt compelled to write something about it. All the mechanisms of Darwinism are really falling apart. You know, there was always the question of, after the discovery of genetics, there was the question of, if a fish evolved into a human being, how did it change its genetic code? Because our genetic code is so different from that of a fish. Well, the evolutionists came up with the explanation, well, it was a series of chance mutations that, you know, natural selection would act on, chance mutations in genetic code. But, you know, if you read Not by Chance by Dr. Lee Spetner of Johns Hopkins, who studied mutations on a molecular level for many years, turns out the mutations actually just delete information from the genetic code. They don't add new information or make things more complex. There's so much like that that's out there. And I get excited about it because I know that so many of my classmates and peers from that I went to school with, the baby boom generation, were just like me. You know, they went down the road to become an atheist because they thought that somehow science had disproven God. But actually, God and science are quite compatible.
Well, when you look at the universe, it's very, very complex.
It's very complex and very designed.
Very complex and very difficult to apprehend what's going on out there, although we're about to, according to information, we're about to go to the moon again, and we're going to go to Mars. And did we ever go to the moon? I don't know. But what kind of space program do we have, and what's the point of that? And in the meantime, the destruction of God, the Ten Commandments, is not to be mentioned any longer. The directions of that, and certainly this country was founded under God, wasn't it?
That's absolutely right. And, you know, the Supreme Court is not supposed to write new laws. They're only supposed to, when a law is disputed, they're supposed to look at the law and say, what was the intent? Now, was it the intent of the founding fathers of America to ban prayer in our school system? If that had been the case, it would have been banned in 1789, you know?
Right.
Or was it the intent of the founding fathers who wrote the Constitution to protect abortion? Well, you know what? Abortion would have been legal in 1789 if that was the case. You know, the Supreme Court recently struck down those, was it a couple years ago in Texas, struck down the anti-sodomy laws, and they said that was unconstitutional. Well, did George Washington and Thomas Jefferson ever defend sodomy? Obviously, the founders of this country and the writers of the Constitution did not want those things, and they were not intending to protect those things through the Constitution. So what the Supreme Court is really doing is usurping the right of the people to make their own laws and rewriting the laws that they don't like.
And that is for an ultimate purpose. And what do you think that ultimate purpose is?
Well, you know, I think, Chris, you know, just to be religious about it, I think that what we're seeing is the spiritual warfare taking place that the Bible talks about. We're really seeing the ultimate battle between good and evil. And there's certainly, you know, a lot of people just look at that and say, well, this stuff just happens. But, you know, you can definitely see there's warfare taking place. You know, there was a minister in Norway, you must have heard about this case, last year, was in prison for quoting the Bible on homosexuality. You know, you see our you know, this
I didn't know that.
Yeah, this kind of thing, I mean, he's been released now, but this kind of thing couldn't have happened 40 or 50 years ago. There's definitely a progression taking place. Or if you look at Hollywood, I mean, I know we're going all over the map,
so
pardon me. But you look at Hollywood, you know, back in the 50s when I was a kid, I mean, my parents could take me to any movie in America because, you know, there's no curse words then.
Yeah.
There was no sex in the movies. And there may have been some violence, but it wasn't the kind of stuff you see today with the blood gushing out of the head. I mean, now, is it just by chance all that is happening? You know, all the changes, you know, the disrespect shown for the Christian faith in movies today, the violence, the cursing, the sex, you know, there's a trend happening. And, you know, where is that trend leading us?
Yeah, and that is the point and the problem. And certainly I've had a guest on a few Wednesdays of past, Honza Molina from Czechoslovakia, and he thinks this is influenced by insiders from Russia, KGB, insiders from Russia that have insided into our government, into our Hollywood spectrum as well. Then you have the Zionist connection to that as well.
The what connection?
The Zionist
Oh, okay.
connection to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like Myron Fagan was talking about at one time.
Right.
And so... obviously, the morals of the American people are being destroyed. I just covered on the 7 o'clock broadcast the fact that we're economically going down the tube. Most of us are wrapped up into debt and loans, and so we're all being manipulated. In the meantime, we watch this violence on television, which is mesmerizing our young people to the point where they may play some of this stuff out in real life,
and in fact do.
Yeah,
and you know, and try to emulate their quote unquote heroes of the screen.
So these manipulative directions, they certainly have a source. Are we able to get to the bottom of the source of all this?
Well, you know, as a Christian, I certainly believe that we are talking about spiritual warfare, and that ultimately there are satanic forces out there that. We're looking at the battle between good and evil, the battle between God and Satan, actually being played out before our eyes in our culture.
You know what the Congressional Medal of Honor is?
Sure.
You know what it looks like?
Well, you know, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
It's not the kind
of thing that I wear around my neck.
It's an upside-down five-pointed star.
Well, I know that, I didn't know that, but I know that...
Now, what does the upside-down five-pointed star mean to you?
Well, I've read about the five-pointed star, or is it a six-pointed star, being a satanic symbol,
Actually, the five-pointed star is Lucifer's symbol.
Okay, right.
And it's been chronicled by many people that have researched it, and see, that's the whole point. The Congressional Medal of Honor, an upside-down five-pointed star, meaning all these wars we've been in have been creations.
Well, and of course, the dollar bill has the back of it has the Masonic pyramid with the all-seeing eye on top. And it's been pointed out that the eagle on the bill there's got, I think it's got 32 feathers on one wing and 33 on the other, which some say could correspond to the 32nd and 33rd degrees of masonry.
Mm-hmm.
But you see occult symbology even on some of our national landmarks.
Yes, and so that's what we're living today. We're living this set up scenario of Satanism that's coming into life in America. We have the Washington Monument, 555 feet tall, but 110 feet down into the foundation, which is 666. That's been bandied about by many. Washington, D.C. is basically a Masonic tell-all, the Pentagon, the center of the pentagram. So yeah, we live this. We're in this mess. And how do we get out of it is the question we ask.
You know, I think that ultimately it's going to be God who's going to take us out of it. I think that all of this, the world government, is leading up to the reign of the Antichrist, which is prophesied in the Bible, in the book of Daniel, prophesied by Jesus, and prophesied in the book of Revelation, that there's going to be a brief reign on earth before the second coming of Christ. And the whole world government thing, which is such a powerful drive to establish world government and to tear down the national boundary of the European Union, NAFTA. There's very powerful forces behind this. And I think there's no question that we're leading up to a world government to set up that tyranny. And that's why I believe that these are, when you look at the ultimate source, we are talking about satanic forces. You know, if Jacques Chirac, the president of France, was to say tomorrow, I am the Antichrist. All of you Americans must obey me. You know, we'd laugh. We'd say, you know, forget it, Chirac. You know, go back to France and eat a baguette, you know, because he's only the ruler of one country. For the Antichrist to rule, he'd have to have a world government. To rule the world, you'd have to have a world government. And that really, I think, summarizes this tremendous drive to establish world government, globalism, expansion of UN powers, environmental accords, NAFTA, all the bilateral trade agreements, World Trade Organization, and all the UN stuff you have on your site, Chris. I was looking at that today, and you have quite a bit about the UN there and this Agenda 21.
Yeah, it's a mess. It's an ultimate mess, and it's 13 years into implementation, which, you know, most people have never even heard of it before. And that's why we stress Agenda 21 on the website, because it's so late. And it's being implemented, and people don't know it because they aren't telling us that. And so, you know, it's quite manipulative the way we're being driven. And
right, especially when the enemy's got his hooks into the media, you know, and so you're not going to find this stuff out, you know, on CNN or, you know, from Tom Brokaw or people like that. You know, you're going to have to look on the Internet and do some searching for yourself to find out. We have to get outside the realm of the major mass media to discover these things.
Which isn't very difficult today, like we said before.
Right. Now, someday they may clamp down on the Internet and just outlaw all the incorrect websites. If I was Satan, that's what I'd be planning to do, you know. But right now we have a window of opportunity. And I've learned a lot from the web over the last couple of years, a lot of things I never knew before. So I'm thankful that the web is there. You know, it certainly, you know, could be a baneful influence. Pornography and other things are out there on the web. But there's some good stuff out there, too. There's information that, man, you know, a few years ago, just nobody could have had access to.
Well, and certainly that's a blessing, and you know, their plan is ultimately to control the Internet. The UN is working on it right now, so you know, how much time do we have? Well, we have time right now, and this is the whole point of it all, trying to drive the points home about the totalitarian control, and certainly the most tragic of it all right now is their sons and daughters and fathers and mothers are off to another Vietnam. And you know, you lived through Vietnam. Here we're seeing it again in the Middle East. Closing down military bases here, opening up military bases overseas, leaving us to, well, what are we being left for? I mean, what is going to happen next? Those in the, at the top have stated it's not a matter of if, but when the next terrorist event will happen in America. Well, when we know that their creations, like Pearl Harbor, allowed to happen, anything's possible at this point, huh?
Absolutely, and of course, I've written a number of articles on Pearl Harbor, which are available at thenewamerican.com. People can click on the subject index there, but you can certainly make a strong case, Chris, that the most of the major wars we've been involved with involve some kind of deceit. In the case of Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt had forewarning of the attack through a number of sources, and he had the decodings of Japanese diplomatic dispatches. He had decodings of their naval dispatches, and he also received a number of warnings from diplomatic personnel and intelligence personnel, but he withheld all that information from our commanders in Pearl Harbor, Admiral Kimmel and General Short, and then after the attack, he had them scapegoated for it and disgraced. But over the years, a number of authors, not just myself, much better authors than myself, have come out with books on it. John Tolan, the Dean of World War Historians, wrote the book Infamy, Pearl Harbor and its Aftermath, really one of the leading texts on that. And more recently, the Navy man Robert Stinnett wrote the book Day of Deceit, which is the first book to break the ground that FDR had access to Japanese naval dispatches. That's just one example of how we've been inveigled into war. But, of course, you know the story on World War One. The Lusitania was sunk, a British passenger ship with Americans on board, and we were told it was just an act of cruelty by the Germans to sink this innocent passenger ship, but the American people were not told that that ship had millions of rounds of ammunition and many of the munitions on board, which is why the Germans really sank it. You know, there was a special on the History Channel recently on the sinking of the Maine in 1898. And, you know, we went to, you know, after the Maine went down, people were, you know, inflamed to patriotism by the call of Remember the Maine.
Right.
Well, I don't know if you saw this on the History Channel, Chris, but they had scientists actually reconstruct the Maine.
Yeah.
Using the exact same metal and kind of bolts they had and set up explosions under different circumstances. And it originally had been claimed that it was hit by a torpedo or that a mine had been sunk it. But they demonstrated by comparing the results they got to the photographs of the raised wreckage of the Maine, they were able to demonstrate very conclusively it was sunk by an internal explosion. And, of course, you skip ahead to the Vietnam War. President Johnson got his authorization for the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, where allegedly the Vietnamese attacked a U.S. destroyer in the Tonkin Gulf. You know, Admiral James Stockdale, winner of the Congressional Medal of Honor, incidentally, which you were just mentioning, was a Navy pilot at that time. He wrote in his memoirs in Love and War, he said he overflew that region for 1.5 hours. There were definitely no Vietnamese boats in the region. And of course, it later turned out that the Tonkin Gulf Resolution was written before the Tonkin Gulf incident took place. And then you move up to the Iraq War, and we were told that we needed to go to Iraq to because Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Yet it turned out those weapons didn't exist, and now we're being given other reasons. You know, we're trying to establish democracy. But, you know, you look back over these wars, and I'm as patriotic as the next guy, but I'll tell you, you can make a pretty good case that most of the wars have been involved in some kind of deception or misleading of the American people.
You remember that bumper sticker from the 1960s stating, what if they gave a war and nobody came?
Well, that might not be a bad idea.
It would be nice to rekindle that bumper sticker, because this is all I've been preaching to for all these years, is hopefully those on the inside would understand what they're a part of. Even though we're only taking orders, they say, doesn't escape their guiltiness for what they're being a part of.
Right. And there are people occasionally, Chris, have come out of that, like James Forrestal, the Secretary of Defense, was very much part of the establishment, but later repudiated it. And, of course, he's the guy that fell 16 stories from the 16th floor of Bethesda Naval Hospital, and a lot of people feel that he was probably pushed after he repudiated the establishment. But, you know, the difficulty, Chris, that is that this puts you and I often in a position of looking unpatriotic. We don't want to support the official U.S. government position on a war. And people think we must be in the same camp as, you know, the leftists and atheists and liberals of Hollywood, you know, and we're not that way at all. We, you know, we have Christian values. We're conservative in our outlook. But
we don't take... We've got to go to commercial pause.
Sure thing.
And then we'll be back with James Perloff, the author of The Shadows of Power, and other publications. We'll be back. Stay with us.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Dial 911 and Die, the book police chiefs and politicians don't want you to read, shows there is no legal obligation for the police to protect you. Just ask yourself, if the police aren't obligated to protect my family and I'm disarmed by legislation, what if...
A burglar!
Dial 911 and Die is available from Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. Order it online at jpfo.org.
This program on FirstAmendmentRadio.com is much more than entertainment. It is more like an information-packed audio magazine delivered direct to you. Like any magazine, if you don't want to keep getting it, simply unsubscribe by not listening. But you are listening, so now go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there to make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program. Not only should you subscribe for yourself, but you should give extra to help us spread the message of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Don't do Internet? You can also write us. First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, 93274. 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. Thank you.
Once again, we're back with James Perloff, and certainly the situation that we see today is very, very obvious to those of us that have spent time to do research. How many people do you think are wide awake in our country? Don't you think a lot are wide awake now?
I would like to think so, but it's a little hard to tell because, you know, listening to the mass media, you wouldn't get that impression because you're not going to hear the kind of viewpoints we're just talking about tonight.
Well, at this stage of the game, it's pretty well been exposed that the reasoning for going to Iraq, like you said, was pretty false.
Well, even Colin Powell has acknowledged that the reports of weapons of mass destruction were mistaken, and our U.S. weapons inspectors have acknowledged that there were no weapons of mass destruction there for many years.
Now we have Homeland Security. Which was planned for long in advance of 9/11, and you know, Hanza from Czechoslovakia thinks that he might have had WMD, weapons of mass destruction, and the Soviets helped him cart it off. I don't know. How do you document that? You can't. But Russia's influence in the whole world spectrum is quite remarkable, and certainly the Ford Foundation has made it pretty clear that they want to merge this country with Russia. So when you have these spectrums in place, and we have this information on our website at this point in time, I'm just at a loss at this point to try to do the right thing for our country. I'm an informer. The last election I voted in was Ronald Reagan because he betrayed us. That was the first election for Ronald Reagan. I've been just like you. We've been living a life of set up candidates for elections. And so, I've come to some conclusions that aren't very pleasant. And so, what do you see that can be more encouraging to other people out there?
Well, I think that, you were saying, what else can you do? And I think you're doing the exact right thing, Chris, is you're taking the initiative. You can't sit in Ted Koppel's seat, but you can sit on this seat on First Amendment Network and get the message out to as many people as you can. Plus, you put up a website with good information on it and links to other sites. And that's about the most you can do as an independent media person these days.
Yeah, and that is our situation. Where do we go from here? What's the most logical thing to do? And if anybody has any questions of James, 559-781-3773. That's 559-781-3773. So when you try to connect these dots to what's behind the ruling of what's being driven, what conclusions do you come to today? I mean, certainly the Council on Foreign Relations is... You wrote a whole book about it. What is their standing today in the world affairs?
Well, their position, I'd say that they take a two-pronged approach, which actually goes back historically a long time. In fact, just to quote their journal Foreign Affairs from its first year of publication, 1922, they said, quote, there was going to be no peace or prosperity for mankind so long as it remains divided into 50 or 60 independent states. The real problem today is that of world government, unquote, Foreign Affairs, 1922. Now, the phrase I want to underscore is peace and prosperity, and that they pair those two words together throughout their history, and the globalists always promise us that if we have NAFTA or we expand NAFTA into the free trade area of the Americas or the people of Europe, they'll tell them, you get peace and prosperity. And as far as the prosperity goes, they're promising that through these bilateral trade agreements, the Free Trade of the Americas, NAFTA, CAFTA, and the World Trade Organization. And there's a lot of emphasis on that because they feel that they can even suck the conservatives in on that one. You know, everybody likes the idea of free. You know, so when they say free trade area, people,
right.
People want to hop on that bandwagon. And the other area is the peace, and the peace... They say will come, of course, the main concern for peace right now, we're told, is the threat of terrorism. So there are other emphases on the war on terror. And you were mentioning that the Homeland Security Agency was actually, the research was done for it before 9/11. You're absolutely right. That goes back to a proposal in 1998. From what was called the United States Commission on National Security, had 12 members on that commission, and 9 of them were members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and they recommended a, quote, National Homeland Security Agency, unquote, which is the exact phrase that President Bush used 9 days after 9/11. So that's their kind of a dual approach, the trade agreements for prosperity and the war on terror for peace and security.
Yeah, and I think that document that they put together was the roadmap for national security. Way back in 1998, roadmap for national security. Amazing, huh?
Yeah, and what you have to really be concerned about, a lot of conservatives and Christians accept these measures because they think, well, it's only going to be used on Muslim terrorists, and so, that's a good thing. But, the definition of terrorists can be rapidly changed. In fact, Anna Quindlen, who's a liberal columnist for Newsweek, wrote a column called after 9/11, she wrote a column called The Terrorist Here at Home. Now, what terrorist here at home was she talking about? The pro-life movement. And let me just quote what she wrote in that column for Newsweek. She said, quote, "There's no real ideological difference between these people," meaning the pro-life movement, "and the people who flew planes into the World Trade Center." And she continues writing, "One of the leaders of Operation Rescue sent his followers a letter that concluded, 'Return to the training so God may use you.' Sound familiar?" Unquote. Anna Quindlen. Now, what she's doing there is drawing these parallels between the pro-life movement, which she characterizes as terrorist, and the guys who bombed the World Trade Center. And so you can see that the definition of terrorist can easily be twisted. Now, someone like Hillary Clinton became president. Imagine that she and Anna Quindlen probably see eye to eye, and you could easily see Homeland Security measures designed, which we thought were only going to be used on Muslim terrorists, perhaps being directed at the pro-life movement. Pro-life movement being classified as terrorist, they could have its assets frozen, its website shut down. This could happen to any sort of constitutionalist, conservative, anti-big government group. They could be simply reclassified as a terrorist, and then Homeland Security could be going after them in a little different political climate.
And that's exactly what I've been saying, too. What is the definition of a terrorist? We've never seen a legitimate definition of a terrorist. Terrorism is very loosely defined. As soon as that action happened at 9/11, they said it was going to be a multi-decade war, the war on terrorism. So we're going to get awful tired of hearing about terrorism, and ultimately we're going to succumb to whatever the government says, because everybody's in fear of the government at this point in time. And a perfect example is the Internal Revenue Service, the revenues for the IMF. People fear the IRS, and you got a brave individual, Joe Bannister, who stood up and said, "No, I'm not going to be a part of this anymore until you can show me some proof that the income tax is legal." And people pay out of fear. We live in basically a communist country. All 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto are being implemented today.
Now, that's right. Two of the planks for the Communist Manifesto were a graduated income tax and a centralized bank. And, of course, those came into being both in 1913 in Woodrow Wilson's first year in office.
There you go. So, you know, Rowan Gaither stated in Norman Dodd in 1953 approximately that the ultimate goal of the Ford Foundation is to merge this country with the Soviet Union. And here we see on our website the goals of the Ford Foundation, the foundation policy on diversity, activities of the Ford Foundation in Russia, right on our website. And they say, beginning in 1950, the foundation sponsored a range of activities in the countries of the former Soviet Union and those of Central Europe.
You know, I saw that link on your website today. I'll have to read that. That's very interesting. I didn't put it together in my mind with the Gaither quote, but that's fascinating. That means that it really became reality, what they were talking about.
Yeah, the truth is here. It's right in front of our eyes. And it's so open now that there's no denial of anything. If you can get people to see on the website, and I don't take any credit for the website, and I'm happy to say that, because, James, you know as well as I do, if you can't work with people, there's no hope at all. And certainly that is the biggest problem of all, is trying to get on the same page with individuals to make a difference. As we try to maneuver ourselves into making a change, and you know, when you talk about the elections, and once again, I go back to this European Union situation. Why in the world would they give the people a chance to vote yes or no for a European Union? Naturally, nobody would vote for a European Union because they can see their economies are suffering as well.
Right, exactly. Just like we've suffered since NAFTA. I'm sure they're experiencing the same thing over there.
Seriously, so we've suffered because of NAFTA. And this is the whole design, is to bring us down to a third world country level. No middle class, no ability to make decisions for yourself because you can't afford to. And you know, I've heard people talk about it before. Some people are just one paycheck away from being out on the street. So,
absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people blame themselves for that, and they don't realize it's actually been a plan against them for all these years. You know, the average person today, Chris, as I understand it, pays more than 50% of his income in taxes. You know, when you take your federal tax, your state tax, your sales tax, your excise tax, your Medicare tax, you add up all your taxes, paying more than 50% in taxes. You know, years ago, it wasn't like that in America. You know, before 1913, there was, you know, our great-great-grandfathers, you know, they didn't have any income tax. And so people wonder whether they're not doing well. Well, you know, when you have, when you're giving up 50% of your money to tax, it, you're going to have to work twice as hard to make up for it. And
yeah, that's correct.
And not only that, but when you're losing all this money to taxation plus inflation, I might add, which is another creation of the Federal Reserve, there was no net inflation in this country between 1770 and 1913. But we've had, since 1913, when we established the Fed, the dollar's lost 95% of its value. So you're fighting income tax plus less and less value to your money. But people think that they, you know, they must be doing something wrong. Well, I tell you that the system has been designed to cheat them. And you know, when you're paying all this money to income tax, you don't have enough money to buy, you know, a car. So what do you got to do? You got to go to your bank and borrow, right? I mean,
there you
it's
go.
Like a vicious circle. And so you get deeper and deeper into debt, and then you're paying money that just interest, which serves no no productive purpose for you.
Well, and that's the sad commentary we live today. We're moving into food control. We're moving into water control now. And environmentalcommons.org is a direction for this, to learn about the control of food. That's environmentalcommons.org. And seems like legislators in 15 states have introduced legislation preventing local control of plants and seeds. And I'll tell you, this is how they say from the UN system that they're going to control populations through the food. And they do not apologize. So this is why I stress so much on the United Nations with the website, because there's where the documentation comes from, James.
Right. And, you know, just to get back to the Council on Foreign Relations for a moment, which is what my book, The Shadows of Power, is about, you know, the UN had its foundation with the Council on Foreign Relations. Just to do a historical highlight for a moment, back in the 1940s, during World War II, a group of Council on Foreign Relations members, calling themselves the Informal Agenda Group, drew up the original plan for the UN. They coined the term United Nations, and they called in three attorneys who were all CFR members of the Council on Foreign Relations, who approved it, said it was constitutional. And then the Informal Agenda Group had an audience with President Roosevelt. He approved the plan, and then the very next day he announced it to the public, and he then made the UN the central priority of United States post-war planning. And when the UN had its founding conference in San Francisco in 1945, 47 of the delegates, that's most of the delegates, were members of the Council on Foreign Relations. So it's very easy to see how all this Pandora's box that you're talking about on your website actually began with the Council.
And certainly the two atomic bomb droppings on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were very totally unnecessary. Because certainly we've been bombing Japan with B-29s for weeks on end. I'm surprised there was anything left standing in Japan. They didn't have an air force at the end of the war, so our B-29s went over there unabated, bombing them. They had Iwo Jima to land planes, which was very close to Japan. And so the people of the world, seeing these two atomic bomb droppings, saying, wow, we better have a one-world government, or we better have a United Nations, huh?
Right. Well, that's another fear factor. You were talking about the factor of fear, and that's another one, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's...
And, I hate to say it, but, you know, we had 9-11, but the next event might be a nuclear one somewhere to scare the world into absolute totalitarian world government.
Well, and that's what Hans has been talking about on these Wednesday nights. The apparently there's, according to his sources, there's nuclear suitcase bombs in strategic places in this country right now, able to blow up, you know, city blocks and things like this to terrorize the population. And what if they set off 40 or 50 of these suitcase bombs in strategic locations? That'll certainly wreak some havoc on the population into fear and capitulation.
I think it would only take one.
Yeah. Yeah. At this stage, anything's possible, and that's the big problem that we have today, that our federal states, actually our federal government, took the ability of the states to govern themselves to the point where we rely on Congress and the Senate to do the best for us, when the 50 sovereign states are basically under the wench of the Federal Reserve System. And that's where the control comes into place, isn't it?
That's right. Look behind, a lot of conservatives think it's just big spending Democrat congressmen that have gotten us into all this debt problem, but they don't see the partnership that exists between the big spenders and the Federal Reserve and the bankers, who make tremendous profits off of treasury bonds, and also by creating money out of nothing, which they, at the Federal Reserve, they do that, of course. A great book on that is The Creature from Jekyll Island by J. Edward Griffin. But, the Federal Reserve just creates money out of nothing, which it then gives to the federal government's employees, when the federal government's employees deposit their banks, and all of a sudden the banks have created some billions of dollars in deposits for themselves, which they then loan back to the U.S. government in the form of treasury bonds, you know. The system is there. It's much more than just the bureaucrats we have to worry about. It's the bankers who they have behind them.
Well, and that's their boss, basically. The Federal Reserve is the boss. I mean, as I've said before, the International Monetary Fund, the Secretary of the Treasury, is the U.S. governor of the IMF. The alternate.
That's amazing. That's amazing that that could happen.
Yeah. The alternate governor of the IMF is Alan Greenspan. Well, that stands to reason. Every country has a governor of the IMF. Every country has an alternate governor of the IMF that's a member of the U.N. system. And ours happens to be, I believe it's John Snow, and then the alternate is Alan Greenspan of the Federal Reserve. This whole manipulative process that we're in today can go down at any time, and we've been understanding that for a long time. They keep it together for all the pieces of the puzzle to come into place. Ultimately, are they going to be suffering if they bring the economy down, they being the elites?
Yeah, when you got that kind of money, you're probably not going to see a whole lot of suffering.
Mm-hmm. And that's where we are today. We're left with this dilemma of no more middle class. We're manipulated into believing what we're told by the television, which is the ultimate mind control device, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. We got cable at home, but you can flip that thing around 118 channels. It's hard to find anything that you agree with, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to find anything to enjoy.
Maybe turn to classic movies is about it, you know.
And even some of those are pretty much full of BS.
Well, actually, even the older movies were pushing the envelope within the moral context of their day. But I still take them over what's out there now for the most part.
Well, I'm very skeptical about the situation that we live today. I'm very upset about the manipulation that goes on with our sons and daughters and fathers and mothers going off to another war. That is tragic, to the tune of billions and billions of dollars this is going on. And obviously we see something going on below the border as this Minuteman Project was formed by the citizens of this country to make a difference, to make a point, but yet our borders remain open, and that's because the State Department has the United States mission to the United Nations, and the United Nations has treaties. President Clinton signed Executive Order 13107 in 1998, Implementation of Human Rights Treaties, which mandated all government agencies comply with that direction, including the Border Patrol.
Well, Chris, I just downloaded something from the Council on Foreign Relations website today, which you might interest you. It's a news release from May 17th of this year. The findings of the Independent Task Force on the Future of North America, which is sponsored by the Council on Foreign Relations. And here's what the task force recommends for North America: a common security perimeter by 2010. And it says, develop a North American border pass and adopt a seamless movement of goods within North America and move to full labor mobility between Canada and the U.S. Develop and implement a North American regulatory plan that includes open skies and open roads and a unified approach on health, food, and the environment. So you're talking about absolute, they want absolute total freedom of movement between the countries they're talking about, what they're basically talking about is NAFTA on steroids. They want to really expand it. But you were talking about immigration. Well, they're talking about making it totally free-flowing, and that's just from a news release from this past month.
Now, ultimately, that is no more borders.
Right. No borders. That's what they want. They want a world without borders, a world with only one government. But I'll tell you something. You know, one reason why we've avoided tyranny in this country, Chris, to date, to the degree that we have, is because the Founding Fathers set up a system of checks and balances. Everybody knows this is basic government, but you know, we have the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch all putting checks and balances on each other. The House balancing the Senate, and the original conception of it, the states were supposed to balance the power of the federal government. And of course, much of it has been so eroded over the years. But the point I want to make is that globally, nations act as a check and balance on each other. If one nation becomes too evil, you can hopefully escape to another country, or one nation can act as a check on the power of another nation. But when you dissolve all national borders, which is what the globalists want, promising us peace and prosperity, you set up the ultimate tyranny, because all power would be concentrated in one set of hands. And James Madison said this. He said, to quote him, he said, quote, "The accumulation of all power in the same hands may be justly pronounced the very definition of tyranny," unquote. And so that's what we're really headed into when they talk about dissolving, ending our, destroying our borders and creating a one-world government. It's an invitation to tyranny.
Well, and that's certainly the case, and we're living it today. And understanding this is everyone's responsibility, especially those that have families. Do you have a family, by the way?
Oh, yes, I have a wife and son, yeah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Oh, I'm sure they're pretty educated, aren't they?
Well, not to the degree that I am.
Yeah, I know. I've got problems with other people that way, too, that they aren't as concerned as you are.
Right. Well, you know, just, you know, my son is fairly young, and there's just so much that I can teach him, you know, in his gentle state of mind, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you have a family and keep it together. It's very, very important to do that, as I recommend to everyone. Don't search for someone else. You've got what you've got. Make it work.
Amen.
And the family unit has been under attack for years, haven't they?
Absolutely. The whole lifestyle, suggestive lifestyle that Hollywood gives people, the abandonment of the Ten Commandments, the suppression of the Ten Commandments, and of course their flagrant violation on the TV screen every day.
Yeah, it's paramount to taking over this country, to destroy the family unit. And certainly that's why you have homosexualism being promoted, you have the smut on television, you've got loose lifestyles being promoted everywhere. My point is, it's all by design to bring down the family unit and to disintegrate the family is basically what I see here.
Right. And Chris, I'm glad you mentioned this by design, because, you know, when I give talks on creation versus evolution, I talk a lot about design, and a lot of people understand that God has a design. I'll talk about God's plan for my life. But a lot of people fail to understand that evil also has a design. And, I like to take examples like, the Federal Reserve was founded in 1913, which gave the bankers the ability to loan massive amounts of money to our government. That same year, 1913, the federal income tax was instituted, both legislations introduced by the same senator, Senator Nelson Aldrich. And, of course, the income tax gave the bankers the ability to have the American people repay the loans they were making to us. Then the next year, 1914, lo and behold, World War I breaks out. We go to war, and our debt goes from $1 billion to $25 billion, just like that. Now, is that coincidence? Is it chance, or is it by design?
Amen.
God has a design, but we mustn't neglect as Christians the fact that evil also has a design.
James, what's your website?